Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special simulcast of the Dr. Christopher Hall Show, and also that's on the Neil Haley Show, and next, also I'm the sports category director for Podcast Magazine, so I'm first going to welcome Nobel Prize nominated doctor, award-winning author, and ER physician, Dr. Christopher Hall. Dr. Hall, how are you? And I know you're excited about our guest.
Hey, I'm doing great. Wow, I'm very excited about our guest. So I think this is an individual who has a wonderful story.
All right, so introduce our guest.
Well, no problem. It's my honor, and I'm very excited to introduce a NFL superstar, a Pro Bowler, okay, a All-American. I'm happy to introduce Mr. Lofa Tatuba to this show. Welcome to the show, Lofa.
Neil, Doc, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Lofa. I know you're excited, so I'm going to pass it right on to Dr. Hall for the first question.
Oh, well, no problem. Well, Lofa, it seems like kind of what I've found out, it seems like maybe athletics and maybe academics kind of run in the family. So, tell us a little bit about kind of like where you're from, where you grew up, and how you got interested in football.
Oh, well, from a football standpoint, it was kind of easy. I'm second generation, meaning my dad played in the NFL for 14 years. And so that was something that came very natural to me. As soon as I knew what a football was, I fell in love with the sport. And so that it was my first love, so to speak. And I wanted my dad being my hero. I think, most kids, their parents are their heroes. And I wanted to do what dad did. And so I got into the family business. And my first year of playing, when I was 7 years old, I wasn't very good. I was heavy. I was the heavy kind of chunky kid. So I had to play with the kids that were 3 and 4 years older than me. And, I was taking my lumps, learning the game, but I loved it. I think those were the years that built a lot of, toughness, mental toughness, physical toughness to stay with the game, because it could have very easily, I could have very easily quit, just been discouraged by not playing much, by not playing well when I did get in. But, I stuck with it and it paid off.
It definitely paid off. So let's talk about at that age when you said you were not the right weight, you were not the best shape. How did you deal with that? It's a young age, so you're playing the sport at a young age. So how did you deal with that? Esteem issues, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. It seems so long ago that, I don't remember it vividly, but yeah, kids got bullied, and, I was essentially called fat, one of the, I was made fun of. And I think that kind of built some of that toughness that, served me well in life, growing thicker skin, no pun intended. But it was, just, it served as a reminder that, how far I've come. But again, it was not easy growing up, and especially growing up, I was in Boston, or just half hour outside of it in Foxborough. My dad played for the Patriots. That's why I'm wearing the Celtics jersey. I know nobody can see it, but they had a big win last night. And yeah, so being the only Samoan in Boston, it was different for that reason too. But I felt like all those things were just helped molding me into, the player that I, am person, but more importantly, the attribute of toughness, like I said, mental and physical, to be able to push through those things when you're not having success. I think that's what ultimately led to my success down the road, sticking with it and putting in the work. And I think it's also something that carried over into my professional, my business life.
Okay, Dr. Hall, next question.
Well, that's just incredible. He talks about the physical, mental toughness. You need to make it through when you're in places that maybe aren't familiar, and you may be the, only brand of your type there. So he makes that point. So, So you were at the University of Maine, ended up at the University of Southern California. Wow, it's a great school. Tell us a little bit about that, your experience at USC, and how that helped to shape you later on in life.
Yeah, I'm just going to back it up, Doc, for a second. Football being my passion, the NFL being the goal since I was seven, I was telling people I was going to play in the NFL. Another speed bump would happen when I see all these kids around the region, you know, getting scholarships to like Boston College and Syracuse and all these Big East schools. And I didn't have any offers to play linebacker from Division I. I had one offer to play linebacker, and that was at Maine at 1AA. And, you know, I did have three other offers, but they were to play quarterback. I was a quarterback and a middle linebacker in high school. So I did have UConn, Rutgers, and Temple offer me to play quarterback, but I didn't see, this is where I made my first business decision. I looked around the landscape of the NFL, and there were no 5'11 quarterbacks. You know, I mean, maybe Flutie was coming back and forth between the CFL and the NFL, but other than him, there wasn't any 5'11 quarterbacks, and there was no Samoan quarterbacks too. You know, kind of speaking to the whole notion of, you know, when you see someone that looks like you doing it, I always saw Junior Seau play linebacker, right. You know, someone that looked like me doing it big. And my dad was a running back, so I played a little running back, but linebacker came natural to me. I don't know what it was about it. Instinctually, it just clicked. So when I sat down with my parents, I was like, look, you know, these are my options. There's not many. I'm going to take the one to go to Maine. And so I went up there, and which, you know, it was a humbling experience. You know, you think, hey, sure, you're playing well, you're going to get Division I, big school, a Power 5 conference offer. It doesn't happen. And, you know, people kind of write you off. They're kind of like, oh, well, he's, you know, he was a good high school player. He's not going to make it. Like, and, yeah, right. So, and I remember at first, you know, I went through like, it was almost like a grieving process, because I was upset that I felt like I let everybody down, like my family, myself, everybody that invested in me, you know, friends and their parents. And, you know, I went to Maine, and then, you know, I got pissed off. I wasn't starting. I was like second or third string, and I had to like have a come to Jesus moment with myself and really like talk to the man in the mirror and say, hey, you know, like who the hell do you think you are expecting a scholarship? And, you know, I mean, yeah, you worked hard, but you didn't work hard enough, I guess, if it's not happening right now. But I knew, because of all the things I went through when I was 7, 8, 9, not playing much, I knew I could stick with it and tough it out, and I was going to be better for it. So my chance came, someone got hurt, and I stepped into a starting role. I got one chance to start, and I led the team in tackles, had a couple interceptions and a sack. And from there, I think, you know, when you finally get that opportunity, being ready for it is what it's all about. And so they saw that, and I started getting more playing time. And then at the end of that year, I told my parents, I said, hey, I want to transfer. And, you know, the transfer portal wasn't like it is now. It wasn't, you know.
Common. No, it's not like crazy what they're doing now. It's ridiculous.
Right?
Yeah. Everyone doesn't stay in school. They go from one school to the next school.
Yeah. And so I wasn't seeing a ton of guys get the opportunity coming out of 1AA, you know. Maybe whoever won the Walter Payton or the Buck Buchanan Award, they would get it, but they would get a shot. But there wasn't many guys outside of them, because the reach of social media and Instagram and putting your, you know, marketing yourself or branding yourself wasn't there back then. So, you know, I made a highlight tape and I sent that thing everywhere. And but before I left, my parents were, this is my second business decision, right? And my parents were like, yo, you know, you had six good games. Like, what are you doing? And I told them, I explained my thought process. Guys weren't making it out of 1AA. They were not getting invited to the combine. And so it was going to be too hard to make it from there. And if my dream was, you know, the NFL, I said, I'd rather go to Division I and know that even if I play special teams or I sit the bench, but I'm a part of something, you know, big, you know, a national title team or something, I can live with not playing in the NFL because I went for it. You know, I'm not going to die wondering like what could have been. I'm going to take my shot. And so with that in mind, or when I had that conversation, they were like, okay, well, you know, we trust you, you know, go ahead. And then I got, you know, was supposed to go to Oregon, But a tape wound up at SC, and we went and met with Pete Carroll and the Trojans in 2002, August of 2002. And when they found out that I was going to go up to Oregon, who was at the top, you know, they had Joey Harrington and all these stars. They were at the top of the, you know, the pack at the time. And when he found out that, he said, well, if I give you a scholarship, will you come here instead? My mom, all my family was down in San Diego. So I said, absolutely. It wasn't even not without a hesitation. And he said, congratulations, you're a Trojan. And, you know, we shook hands and I looked over to my dad, and it was, you know, one of the few times I remember him, you know, getting his approval, but, you know, Tim saying, you know, smiling, he said, hey, I'm proud of you, you know, like, so I knew I had done something pretty big, you know, if he was going to say those words.
Now, see, your father, and this is, and I would love the other follow-up, but I want to get to your father. Now I get the last name. My goodness, you painted your own picture of a successful NFL career, but your father, I remember completely, because again, when you're talking about that name and the Patriots at that time, that's got to be difficult. So you want to end up going to play at Maine when your father was this NFL star, right? And you're like, I'm not living up to his expectations or my own expectations because my father did so well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh man, it's you cast a big shadow. And you know, one in some respects that I'm still living under, and I'm happy to do so though, because it's that's how special he was. You know, it's been 12 years since he passed, 11 years since he passed. Sorry, I didn't hear that. Oh no, it's thank you. But you know, I see he passed the 54, and you know, a lot of people, oh, it's so young. It is. It's young if you didn't live. My dad lived. He lived every year of those 54, and I'm lucky to have had 28 with him. And so, you know, perspective is huge in life. And but you know, there's still to this day, I'll get an email, I'll get a text message. You know, just telling me about the impact that he had on somebody's life, you know, and that's what it's all about, you know. How many people can you reach and impact while you're here on earth? And so, yeah, you know, in many regards, it felt like I failed him by not, you know, getting a major scholarship and, you know, living up to the name. And, you know, because I was sitting there thinking, I was like, yeah, like, I mean, I thought Boston College right down the street, at least I'd get a chance, right? But it didn't happen. But everything, firm believer.
Everything works out for a reason.
And everything happens for a reason.
You have to always look at that. And I'm sorry to hear your father's passing. I just remember specifically. So he played for the Patriots at what time? It was at
78 to 90.
So he played with Grogan, the days of Steve Grogan.
And oh, yeah. Yeah.
I interviewed Steve Grogan years ago. It's like I pull up all these different ones. I'm having someone on my team go back and check every – to come up with my list of 8,000-plus interviews, and I probably interviewed celebrity athletes and entertainers of thousands of people. And I don't have the list, you know? And I might have to find some of these interviews. Literally, yesterday I found one that I'm like, oh, my goodness. I remember I interviewed John Rich. Well, heck, it wasn't showing up on one thing. It was showing up on YouTube, and I had to figure out and maneuver my way to get it downloaded on YouTube because it wasn't on another podcast anymore. So go figure. All right, back to you, Chris, for the next question.
Oh, no, no. I mean, it's kind of an incredible story. And then, you know, when I listen to him saying, you know, I went to high school about two blocks from the University of Southern California, and so – when I listen to him talking about USC, and I think he knows that area is kind of a rough area. You have a lot of young kids around there who are striving, you know, to change their lives, to you know, advance in life. And some of them actually want to go and do what our star has done here today. So tell us a little bit about that, Lofa. I mean, what are some of the principles you think these young people can learn from you to be more successful in life?
Oh, that's a good question. Chase your passion is the one that I always tell people when they ask for advice. You know, I don't believe that line. If you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. You're going to work. You're going to work your ass off no matter what you're doing. But, you know, if you want to be successful at it, And so, you know, that's what I was blessed to do. And I really only focus on things that I love. And that's what I, you know, I gravitated towards naturally, whether it was football. And when I got out of it, coaching football, and then also leading me to my other business endeavors. But everything I do, I don't do many things, but I do them because I love them and I have fun doing them, if that makes sense. And I think it, you know, stress is, there's a lot of stress in life, right? For everybody, you know, things are stressful. Life is stressful. But if you get up every morning with a purpose, you know, outside of your family, right? That's obviously, you know, number one, but you know, for something to do, if you're doing something that you love, I mean, it is, you're lucky. And so, you know, you always, I believe you got to do what you have to do until you get to do what you want to do. But, you know, definitely work on what you love, and you'll find a role, maybe not the one that you want right away. Like if football didn't work out, I probably would have been a coach, and I would have immersed myself in a scouting or a coaching role. And I believe I would have been one of the best because I love it that much. And I did coach for 2 years, 15 and 16. I got to coach with the Hawks, assistant linebacker coach. And I loved every minute of it, but my kids were just too young. And so I wasn't ready to sacrifice the informative years of their childhood for, you know, something. I wasn't going to be selfish, and because I love football so much, miss out on these years that you're not going to get back. So.
And see, that's commendable. Let's talk about USC. At the point where you went from Maine to USC, you were hoping just to play. Did you ever imagine you'd be in the NFL at that point, especially? Yeah. Did you think you would be? Yeah,
absolutely. You know, everybody, they told me I was crazy. I heard, you know, they're like, yeah, okay, well, we'll see. But I believed, you know, the whole time that, you know, not that, you know, it was meant to be, but that I was going to make it happen. And so I don't, when someone believes, I mean, you see it in their eye, you see it in the way they talk, and they're going to work because that's how much they believe that they're going to make it happen. And so, I kept just, you know, having visions of getting drafted and, you know, what that would be like. It was, you know, I'm sure everybody was, you know, nauseous listening to me talk about my future plans, because from the time I was 7 until the time I actually made it, whenever anybody asked me, hey, what are you doing? I, you know, working towards playing in the NFL. Like, I just kept, it just naturally happened. That's how, you know, much I loved it. And yeah, man, so it was wild and, you know, grateful. I mean, I landed in a great place. You know, you have to have some luck on your side. And, you know, being in a position, and you know, Pete was bringing in top 5 classes left and right. Right. So the talent around me was ridiculous. I played with 3 Heisman Trophy winners. You know, our offense was always stacked. So it's easier to play defense when most of the times you have a lead, but you know, nobody does anything alone. So I really believe that I was put in some great situations, and I just took advantage of the opportunity that was presented. Cause that's the thing is, you know, a lot of people get that shot, but they're not ready for it.
Okay. Exactly. All right, Chris, next question.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I mean, it's just, wow. So many great things we're learning from our NFL Pro Bowler today. So the other question I had, transitioning, when you leave those kind of professional sports, maybe going to business or coaching or things that you've talked about. Tell us a little bit about some things that you got involved in. Is there a company called Zonalin, or I'm not quite sure?
Yeah. No, I got part of a couple companies, co-founded a couple of them, but you know, I came back here to coach, didn't realize how much I missed Seattle. I'm still in Seattle. This is a fake background though, so don't get fooled by the Space Needle. And when I was coaching, you know, me and my wife realized how much we missed it here. Our firstborn was born here. Just a lot of, great moments that happened here. And so when I came back, coaching afforded me the opportunity to, you know, be in a place that we were familiar with and love. But also what was happening was, you know, it was right on the cusp of cannabis becoming legal, you know, medically, and then taking a leap into recreational, right, upon the time we were coming here. And so from a business opportunity, my friend, brother, Matt McCoy, NFL brother, known him since I was 18. He went to San Diego State. We got some properties together in the green zone. So where you could legally grow and produce cannabis. Mm-hmm. And so we just started off as like a real estate venture for us because, you know, we didn't know much about cannabis other than we like to consume it. I mean, really, I'm just going to be serious, going to be honest. And so we put some people in place and, you know, they were supposed to run it and, you know, they just weren't holding up their end of the bargain. And so, you know, my very, you know, it was a great move and smart move by my brother, Matt. He was like, hey, we got to take this over. We got to save everybody's money, everybody's, you know, investment. And we could do it. And I was just like, I asked him, that's the first thing I asked him. I go, yo, do you think we could do it? He goes, we'll figure it out. That's scary, right? When you got other people's money on the line, your own, you know, obviously, but then other people's, you know, your friends and other people, it's like, man, like, I don't want to let them down. And, you know, I had the conversation with them and I was just like, oh, well, you know what? I won't. I'll just work my ass off. Like I do it, everything else. And with my brother, Matt, his leadership and his guidance, you know, we learned it. We learned it inside and out. We learned, you know, how to grow cannabis, how to, you know, we built out the whole facility, you know, ran operations, packaging,
wow,
developing and growing a brand from scratch. It was insane.
That's like, awesome.
And we were doing it all on the fly, man. But again, I was doing something that was fun, that I loved. Like I said, remember, do what you love. And with one of the few people that, you know, feels like family, like I felt like I knew him for my whole life upon meeting him. And so, yeah, he's one of my best NFL brothers I ever had, man. He's been awesome. That's and awesome. So we've been building that together. And that's 1937 Farms is our brand up here in I-502 legal recreational cannabis in Washington. And throughout this whole process, you know, I, because of the injuries and, you know, a bunch of things, my career was shortened because of, I had 10 surgeries, I had 15 plus concussions. And, you know, I didn't realize it because I was in the storm, right? In the eye of the storm, but I didn't realize how bad my health had gotten. I ballooned up to like 275, 280 pounds.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was bad.
You look great now, for sure.
At 235, man, I'm back to my playing weight. You guys see? So
no one sees it, but I'm gonna take this interview and put it out. Even though it was supposed to be TV, I'm gonna make it TV because you're amazing. I can do some editing and put my. I didn't plan on getting on camera, but I can fix all that. So I'll do some of the editing process from that. But man, this is the thing I'm gonna talk about. You saw what you did in sports because again, I'm a former professional wrestler. And a former school teacher, and I took all those talents into my entrepreneurship, where I have nationally syndicated radio, TV show, and all these things. I have clients. I have an agency that helps grow tribes and communities. So I've done the whole process. I've done the entrepreneurship. And when you wake up every day as an entrepreneur, and you're an entrepreneur because you created something out of nothing, and you come up with a plan in a marketplace, it's got to feel good, man, doesn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. It's tough to really put it into words. And even because I didn't graduate from college, and you know, so I couldn't have imagined of starting my own business and running it, you know, with people that I love. It's just, you know, I felt like, oh, it's, you know, not meant for me, you know? So, and then through that first venture that we got into, and upon using cannabis, more importantly, there was very low THC, these capsules that a friend of mine made, and they were high in CBD and all the other minor cannabinoids, all the other minor plant compounds. And man, I mean, so this is where everybody thinks, oh, well, they, you know, stoner stigma, they just want to get high. No, this is little to no high, happy, not high. And the most insane amount of production I've ever had in my life. I'm talking in every facet of my life, I got better.
So this is definitely medical.
Yes. So that's where, you know, CBD started to come into play. And, you know, because I think it was back to 15, 16, where I first started hearing about it and I started researching it. What was it? And, you know, the hemp derived. So I have a cannabis company, which is 1937 Farms. That is only legal in Washington because it's not federally. You can't cross state lines. Wow. There's some states that are legal and others that are not. CBD is federally legal everywhere. And I started hearing more and more about it and, you know, what people were taking it for. And it was, anti-inflammatory, a neuroprotective, you know, to hopefully combat the brain injuries I was going through, which was, they were presenting a lot of cognitive issues from, you know, short-term memory, you know, struggling to sit down and focus to even read. It was, it was insane how hard life had become. Like I said, I was in the eye of that storm and, you know, luckily this was the, you know, the life vest that was thrown to me or and I couldn't believe it when I found it. So for the next, before I spun off and started another company, Zone In CBD, which is the one you just mentioned, Doc. And, you know, that's changing lives daily out here, which is, you know, I couldn't be more grateful for because it's changed my life. And these are products that they've made me my best version of myself. And I think that's pretty, you know, outside of helping as many people as you can while you're here on this earth, becoming the best version of yourself is really what it's all about. And so,
all right. So, so we're going to jump quick podcast questions and Chris is going to summarize you really quick. Here are quick podcast questions. Go, Chris.
I'll talk during the summer. Sure.
Okay. So the quick podcast questions. One is, why did you start your podcast? These are quick sound bites like you were on ESPN or something. Go. Let's go with those. Go.
I love football, and they offered me the opportunity to talk football and Seahawks.
Okay. So based on podcasting, did you have any radio experience before doing podcasting?
None at all. I'm learning on the fly like everything else.
How many hours a week do you prepare for your podcast?
Couple hours, and we film for an hour, but couple hours of you know, notes and stuff like that.
What do you think is the biggest challenge of being a podcaster?
My team makes it easy. I know that's a cop out, but they make it easy. I show up and just, you know, talk trash.
Okay. That's great. And what are your goals for your podcast? Where do you want to see it?
Which is crazy because I have goals in everything else I do, but it's something I'm really just having fun with. And I don't know what the possibilities are. Uh-huh. And just like anything else, when it's not fun, I'm done. So
Lofa, you got to make it. You have to set some goals for yourself on that. I'm going to tell you right now, set some goals.
I'll take it from you, man. You 8,000 interviews. I got a lot to learn from you.
Yeah. And but also remember to go on the fly and do an interview anywhere you're at. Doesn't matter if you're in the airport, doesn't matter. You want to do it. And that's the big thing. So basically social media, do you use social media a lot for your podcast to promote it?
No, I'm the world's worst self-promoter of all time. It's really something that's holding me back. I don't know.
Well, we need to talk. We need to talk, brother. We need to talk. Okay. All right, Chris, go ahead for your last question and then you'll summarize, Lofa. So quick question, but like 2 minute answer. So we'll go with your question, Chris.
Just kind of follow up from what he was talking about. And, you know, from a medical standpoint, as an MD and as a doctor over 21 years, and I know that the CB oil, the receptors, CB1, CB2, located throughout the brain, central nervous system, many parts of the body, the anti-inflammatory. And again, I think you mentioned use for anxiety, depression, certainly for pain, okay, and certainly research is probably not, or it's certainly legal all over the U.S. So just wanted to put that as from a medical standpoint, a very safe product. So not really a question. I can summarize, talk a little
about it. Yes, go ahead and summarize on that. Go ahead.
Well, no problem. So God, we just learned so much from Lofa, so many important points that he had for the young people. And some of the things were pretty much, get up every morning, with a purpose, focus on the things that you love, okay? Look up to your parents, your parents are doing great things as a role model, okay? Perspective, what is everything in life, is what he said. And that's very, very important. And when you get opportunity, take a shot at it. You have opportunity, take a shot and do what you love to do. And so, wow, we see exactly why he's been successful over the years. He is a brand of his own kind. And so, wow, it was really great having Loaf on the show today. Thanks for coming on the show today, sir.
Thank you guys so much, Doc, Neil. You guys are the best.
Appreciate it. And Loaf, now I'm calling you out. And we're going to talk on the phone. You're going to build your podcast to a level because you're an entrepreneur. That's another brand awareness for your companies. This is one where you don't have to go on social media. If you blow this podcast up and go on and promote the podcast, more and more people are going to find your business and you're going to grow to the level that you want to grow to. And I really love your intensity and I appreciate you coming on. Where can people find the business stuff too? Where can we go?
Well, 1937 Farms is it's available only at select retailers out here in Washington, mostly the Seattle area. Zone In CBD, you can find it and learn more about it at zoneincbd.com. This is the stuff that put me back together after countless brain injuries from the concussions and all the surgeries I had. I am back out playing basketball like 4 or 5 times a week. I couldn't even do that when I was playing in the NFL. It was like I saved up everything I could just to have that one Sunday. And man, if I had this back, I'm not going to say I would have been a Hall of Famer, but I would have made a couple more Pro Bowls if I had this back then. And I think that's the narrative I want people to understand is how much better this has made me in every facet of life, that it's something that, you're missing out on if you're not at least, trying it. And, it's something that, like I said, I'm very passionate about and I'm lucky to be doing. And for 3 years before I started the business, I believed in it so much. I was just buying it and handing it out to friends and family and watching some of my loved ones become the best version of themselves. It was insane.
You're a definite testimonial. And also the Believe Podcast Network is where you can check out your podcast. Your podcast name is?
Believe in Seahawks. We are going under a name change though, but for right now it's Believe in Seahawks. I don't think the Hawks are too happy about, their name being used even by one of their own.
They're available on it's available on Apple Podcasts and all different podcast places, but go to Believe Podcast because we love Bron. Bron is the man and I'll keep telling him that I love him. And how we hooked up is how all the world hooks up and meets new people. And that's what having a radio show, podcast, and television show brings to the table. Appreciate it, Lofa. Thanks, Dr. Christopher Hall. And that was the Dr. Christopher Hall simulcast with Podcast Magazine. Take care, guys.